Hi, it's Thursday, March 30th, 2023, and this is the TCOT Podcast, Episode 11, The Festive Felon. It aired in Season 7, Episode 9, and it originally aired November 28th, 1963. The case of the podcast is a Perry Mason fan podcast. We love and enjoy episodes from this show, and it's old, but it works for both of us, and we just really do enjoy it.
Yeah,
I'm Dee.
And I'm April.
And we just want you to know that there's going to be lots of spoilers in the show today, so it's a good idea if you've already seen the episode, but you will learn a lot about the episode today. So, April.
We may spoil other episodes too, so just to let you know, don't be shocked.
We talk about it all.
Yeah, it's a 60-year-old show, so catch up. So we're talking about the Festive Felon because it has a common string with the last episode, which was the borrowed baby, and we'll get into that a little bit more. But we're going to go over.
This is what I want to say, first of all. Okay. I have a problem with the title of the show. First of all, who was the Festive Felon?
I think it was, she was a felon because she took the briefcase.
Okay.
And
I thought the Festive Felon at first was Max.
Oh, no. Well,
and yeah, there were a lot of felons going on there, though.
Right. And then there was a felon of trying to steal the check from Hedger.
And that was a felony. And that was a whole central part of the case, what they call that felony of malice or whatever it was.
Malice of forethought. Malice, yeah.
So there was a lot of felons in the
festive
show. So you all write in and tell us, who do you think the Festive Felon was? Because I'm saying it's Max. Then I said, oh, no, it's Justin.
But I think it's Madeline because she was getting married.
You think it's right.
And so
what was so festive? The wedding.
The wedding, yeah.
The wedding.
That's what I think. So what do you think?
Because I didn't see much festivity going on in the whole show.
I mean, it starts out so horrible. First of all,
it was not necessarily a very festive show. It starts out horribly.
That poor woman is laying on her deathbed and these five people are standing around her. I'm sorry, if I'm dying, please don't step back. And second of all, Eloise is not the person I want holding my hand. And I just felt like her fingers were doughy, and she's patting BB's hand, and she's just she is a mess.
Fake crying.
No, they had the whole, you know, rich person atmosphere, the four poster bed. Does anybody have a four poster bed anymore? That just seemed like so much to have in a bedroom, and it was all heavily curtained. And of course, wallpapered. So she's surrounded by Eloise, Lawton, Chester. Chester and Eloise are married, right?
Yes, and Lawton and Chester are brothers.
And then Reed is Lawton's son.
Lawton's son.
And then Justin Grover.
And Justin Grover is the family attorney.
Right. So we're going to talk about them real quick. Eloise was played by Elizabeth Frazier. She's been in three episodes of Perry Mason, and her most significant, interesting other role, she's been in, you know, most of these people have been in so many different things, and I just hate to rattle them off. I think anybody can read IMDb and figure out, but her most interesting thing that she has been in was A Patch of Blue. I thought that was...
What part did she play in A Patch of Blue?
I don't remember, but I think she was one of the friends. She wasn't the mother, because that was Shelley Winters, wasn't it? And I think she might have been just a friend.
That's where Patty Duke was blind, right?
It wasn't Patty Duke.
But it wasn't Patty Duke. Oh, I'm getting my movies mixed up.
Yeah, but the woman, the kid was blind, and Sydney Poitier befriended her, and Eloise. BB was played by Ann Barton, and she's been in 4 episodes of Perry Mason, and a whole bunch of other things, including she was actually in 9 to 5 and Maud, and The Graduate. So she's been in a lot of stuff, and the Perry Masons that she was in. That I have seen. Oh, she's in the Sausalito Sunrise. Isn't that one of your favorites? That's the one where I'm confusing the two myself. I was thinking about the one where Della asked Perry for the money, but that's not it. Anyways, so she's been in 4 episodes of Perry Mason. And Jeff Morrow plays Lawton Brent, and he's been in 3 episodes of Perry Mason. And then Reed Brent, who's Ray, is played by Ray Strickland. He was in 1 episode with Elizabeth Frazier. They were in Bashful Burrow together. And then Chester Brent was played by Gilbert Green, and he was in Star Trek, which was interesting because we're going to find out that there are 2 other actors in this who were in Star Trek. So we have
that is interesting.
We have a 3 Star Trek connection. So they're all standing around, and they're telling them that the doctor will be in 10 minutes. But here's the thing that got me, and I didn't understand. The nurse went to get the medicine. If you got a sick patient and the doctor's not there, why didn't the nurse stay and somebody else run out and get the medicine? And then on top of that, I'm going ahead. So there's and here's what's really criminal about this. She asked by name.
There it is, Mrs. Brent.
All of you. Eloise, Chester, Lawton, Reed. I want you to be witnesses. Just in the words. What are the words I ask you about? For the gift.
You mean gift causa mortis?
Gift in anticipation of death. Irrevocable gift from my nurse, Hetty Randall.
To Hetty.
And it was also asked them to witness the gift causa mortis.
Right, a gift.
And that is a gift in case of death.
Right. And she reaches for the envelope. They pull it out. Justin promises to get it. They say, oh, well, Hetty's not here. Okay, well, you have to give it to her for me, which is good that she did that instead of saying, okay, well, we'll wait for Hetty.
I know.
Yeah.
She didn't last long after that.
But they look at the check, and she's still laying there. And I'm like, she can still hear them. And they open
buzzards.
It up, and Justin announces that it's a certified check for $1 million.
Gasps and groans, and I know Eloise clutched her pearls. Oh, my God, $1 million.
And that's when Lawton says, $1 million to a nurse? And and Reed says, after 20 years in this house, no, Dad, Hetty has always been more than just the nurse. Which is interesting. I mean, I don't know. So Eloise kept questions the whole thing. She's so horrible. She goes, well, it hasn't been delivered. We could just have her tear it up when she wakes up, and then all the money will revert to the 3 of you. You know, first she said
the 2 brothers. I think it was the 2 brothers, right? And then she said, you too. It could be you too, Justin.
Which is interesting because we find out later on that they have a little something going on. So she's got an ulterior motive on both sides. And then we hear Bibi gasp, and Hetty comes in, and she says, "Oh, I came as fast. I took a cab." What? You mean you guys have all this money? You all have cars.
There's probably a chauffeur somewhere standing around.
She took a cab back. So does that mean she walked to the pharmacy? I mean, come on. And
poor Hetty.
And then that's when Eloise says, "Oh, it's too late. She's dead." And Hetty was the only one that cried.
Right.
She put her head down and she cried. And the other ones were just standing around like, duh, 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 duh. Oh, she, you know, because they thought they were getting, they were going to inherit the business and everything. So the next scene, which is such an opposite contrast. First, we have.
Oh, this is the festive part of the show.
Right, this is the festive part. we have a swimming pool. This nice big pool too. I like that. She has her. The other thing I liked about it was she had her swimming cap on, and when she got out, and you could see that some of her hair was still wet. At the bottom. Sometimes they take off.
No realism.
Yeah. Sometimes they take off the swimming cap and the hair is just perfect. It's not going to be perfect underneath that. And so they kiss. Reed actually loves. And I think it's weird though, if you think about it. Apparently, they both grew up in this house. Because we later on see Chester and Eloise in their dressing room talking about upstairs.
That wasn't the only time that I saw a little incestuousness. As we go on in the story, it becomes like, can they get married?
They're not related.
Well, they're not related, but it just seemed as we would get into the story that they was in the family, you know what I mean?
By marriage, because we'll talk about that when we get to that point. Everybody knows, you've seen it. So they're talking about the wedding. They're very excited. They want to know if Madeline's concerned, because she's like, is it too soon?
Martin, seriously, the wedding day, do you think it's too soon after baby's death?
Not at all. I spoke to her, as a matter of fact. She was insistent. She said that if something happened to her, she didn't want the two of you postponing the wedding.
Should we be marrying so soon after baby's death? So this is like within the few days after she'd passed. And, Lawton says that he had talked to Bibi, or so he says. I mean, how much do you think he might have been exaggerating? He said that he talked to her, and she said that if anything happened, she wanted them to go ahead with the wedding plans. And that's when Lawton walks in with the briefcase, the infamous briefcase. They show it a lot with his initials on it. And he goes, "Oh, are you talking about the day?" And Madeline says, "The day or D-Day, same difference." They're joking about it. And they talk about that Justin had gotten a call from Uncle Max, and he said he heard about the so-called gift. And if you look at Lawton and Reed, they both look guilty. The thing that's sad is that Justin says, "Oh well, he was kind of, you know, he was bothering me, and he was talking, you know, he kind of like was, you know, like he was rude to him, but he knew that there was a gift." He goes, "There was no gift."
Yeah. Oh, they are denying to the death. Even before that, because Madeline goes off. And Lawton and Reed get into it about this so-called gift.
Right,
and
there was no gift.
Lawton is like, "Well, we need time. We've got to have, just give us some time."
Well, that was after this, because they talk about this after Madeline leaves.
I thought Madeline left and Justin came in.
Right, so Madeline, so he Madeline tells Justin, I'll talk to Uncle Max. I'll clear him up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll talk to him. Like, you know, like she's some kind of a peacekeeper going to put him in his place when he was right. You know? And Reed and Lawton look guilty, looking all guilty because they know. And then that's when Madeline leaves. And that's when Lawton says, Justin says, I just need time. So they're going to go look over the paperwork. And then the next scene, we're in Hetty's kitchen, which I'm kind of confused. What does Madeline do, first of all? She seemed to have, neither her or Reed had a job. Maybe they kind of work for this company that...
Well, yeah, Reed probably worked for the company. Now, Madeline, I don't know, she's pretty young.
Right, but she looked sharp. She had nice clothes. And
she did have nice clothes.
She had a nice suit on.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and then she said...
But Hetty was her mother, so she probably didn't make a lot of money.
Right, she was just a nurse. Right, mm-hmm. And... She said,
I think BB gave her an allowance. BB probably gave her an allowance.
Under the table, like, here.
Take right.
This. Here's a gift. You know, don't worry.
To, you know, be a, what you call them, a companion or something like that.
Right. And they talk about that he just, so Hetty and Max are in the kitchen with Madeline. Oh, and Hetty is ironing on an old-fashioned ironing board, but that's the same ironing board. It's almost exactly the same as we have now. It is not.
Yeah. I've used that type of ironing board.
Right. I don't see my brother sometimes for years on end. Is he busy? No. Just bumming around from one lumber camp to another. Finally, he decides to see whether I'm dead or alive. What happens? He had 5 minutes, and he's poking his nose where it doesn't belong.
I've got a right to see you get what's yours.
Of course you do, Uncle Max. And I'm sure whatever it was that Aunt Bebe wanted Mother to have, Mr. Grover will see that she gets it without anyone pushing him.
See? Madeline talks good sense. There's no need for anybody to call, push, do anything. Nobody here. And that last remark about the family. Now, why didn't you just come right out and say she shouldn't marry a Brent?
Maybe I should have. They're a bunch of gritty crooks, all of them.
That's not true. Reed's a fine boy.
Is he? Wasn't he there in that room when Bebe died? And you mean to say that he doesn't know what happened, everything that happened? I suppose he told her, Madeline, the girl he's going to marry. Huh. I bet he told her all about it.
Now, you look here. I know what I'm doing. Oh, Max, I swear.
Call them all a bunch of crooks. He was right. They wasn't right. They were a bunch of crooks. Right. But Hetty said, you know, you've been gone all this time. You come in and then the first thing you do is start meddling in my business.
Yes. And he says,
just a regular old sister and brother, right?
Well, that's the other thing, too. They had the same last name. How is she a widow? And her last name And his last name is the same, and Madeline's last name is the same. They didn't. I mean, maybe they wanted to do it that way so that Madeline would have Max's last name. But it was just weird.
Yeah. That is weird. I hadn't thought about
she
that.
She should have had a different last name. So Madeline leaves. And then she realizes that she left her gloves because, you know, back then they all wore, the ladies had matching gloves. That's actually been a clue in a few Perry Masons where somebody left the glove somewhere and, you know, they figured it was the wife's glove or something. So she goes back to get it, but then she overhears them arguing. Knowing that they were all there, including Reed, who wants to marry her. And they are lying, you know, lying about that, about the gift.
All denying it.
Yes. And I think that's when he says they're a bunch of crooks. And I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
And so then she realizes that, Hetty realizes that Madeline has left her glove. And she goes to look for her. Madeline zipped out of there because she didn't want to face it. She ran right to Reed. And she says, you know, I hear there's a gift, and Reed's like, oh, let's just talk about the wedding, la, la, la.
Yeah.
We're going to bring
that. Why do you want to talk about that?
No, I want to know about this gift. And I know you're lying to me, and says, yeah, and he wouldn't admit it, so she storms off.
A lot of things were said. Yeah, there were a lot of people around.
There's a lot going on. You know, Reed, and you're lying. And that's so horrible, because it was a lot of money, and it was, yeah. And
but, I mean, the guys were, they were right. I mean, they did want to put it back. They just, they didn't have it. But out of $1 million, it's just $150,000 is missing.
Yeah. So
you could say that. I got all of it except
this part. But you can't, that's the only thing. You can't do a certified check without the money being put up first.
Well, that's true. That's so true. The money has to be there. They won't certify it otherwise.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So that was kind of, you know, right. Of course, I always like to say, this is entertainment. It's not a documentary. Documentary. Why am I saying that wrong? It's not a documentary. It's just, sometimes you have to just suspend your
literary license.
Yes.
Things could have been said, we said.
So the next scene is Reed arguing with his mother, with his father, about not giving the money to Hetty. And that's when Lawton says, we just need time. It's just a matter of time. Because Lawton thinks that Chester stole the money, and he was trying to cover for his brother. So then Madeline goes to Justin, and he's saying the same thing. It's a matter of time. She's in Justin's office, and she's like, I want you to tell me the truth. You got a gift for my mother. What's going on? Why are you doing this? And
but up until this time, it's not clear exactly why they are denying it.
Right. And
why they're saying that she, you know, that there was no money, there was no check.
So now he's
trying
to say.
But, you know, so at this point, I'm thinking, yeah, they're going to shuffle that money around and they need time to put it back. That was pretty evident right from the beginning. Right. But they wouldn't admit either.
They probably thought that once BB died, they would just be able to do whatever they want with the money and nothing would.
Because it was going to be split between the two brothers.
Right. Yes.
Right. Exactly.
Right. So that's when Carla comes in with a whole list. Come on, Carla. The guy from the warehouse, the judge, your partner, the man from this. You could have just said one or two people. Now, Carla is interesting. She is played by Sherry Jackson, and she has been on Star Trek. She played. We didn't go over Madeline either. Both Madeline. Okay, this is a good time to go over both of them. Okay, so Madeline is played. I'm sorry, Madeline is played by Sherry Jackson, and she was on Star Trek, and. She's still alive, which is nice. And Carla was played by Kathy Brown, and she was on an episode of Star Trek. So we have three Star Trek.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. They both played, one of them played like a robot, and the other one played a person from another planet. And they were very good. So Grover, Justin leaves, Carla is questioned. Madeline says, when he presses a button or something in the office, how long does it take for you to come in and interrupt what's going on?
And Carla, she says, half a minute. Then she realizes she don't stepped on her, put her foot in her mouth.
Right, and spilled the tea. So then of course she says, tell him I will see him one way or another, and storms out. It's always, they always got to say something threatening to the person. Yes.
To be repeated later.
Right. So the next scene, she's in Eloise and Chester's bedroom, large bedroom. I mean, this is a suite. Eloise is sitting at a vanity table. You know, did you ever have a vanity table?
I never have.
Did you want one? I mean, it just seems really neat. The little cushion.
Oh, I would love to have one. I have a vanity counter in my bathroom, and it's right. A lot of junk. Yeah. You know, all the stuff I need.
She's wearing pearls, and she's telling that they. Madeline is saying, you know, I know there was a gift, and they scream that we were upstairs in this, and right here in this house, BB died. There was no check. Chester's still, you know, laying the.
He's screaming.
And she says, Eloise says, Chester, let me talk. And she goes, like, we have a party to go to, and we're late, and we don't know anything about any gift. And Madeline screams, you're all liars. And Eloise makes her leave. So the thing that got me about this scene is there is some level of intimacy, some level of comfortableness for her to be in their bedroom. But apparently she had the run of the house probably from the time she was a little girl, you know, and probably BB overindulged her. And nobody questioned it because BB didn't have any kids. So this is my chance to be, have a kid in the house. So we're in Perry's office, and Perry's explaining that they're talking about the gift, and Della brings in a law book and says that a caregiver can give undue influence over the person they're caring for. So this gift was a way of making sure that the money went to Hetty without putting it in the will, because the will could be contested. And so, you know, Perry's given her a lot of lawyer speak. And Madeline says, I'm not sure if you're encouraging me or discouraging me. Are you going to help my mother? And Perry says, did you think for one moment, did you imagine for one moment I wouldn't? And so that was kind
of... He's such a doll. Yeah. Of course he'll help. He helps everybody.
Yes, he does. So the next
Especially scene, the downtrodden underdog.
The next scene, Madeline's coming home, or coming to Hetty's house, and Reed is waiting outside, pacing and smoking. And when he sees Madeline, he says that... Madeline tells her, I know this might be Pat, but you can talk to my lawyer, Perry Mason. And she says that he moved out, and he will talk to Mason, and he admits the truth. He says that he was in the room when BB. I know somebody named Bebby, and that makes me say BB. It said the check was for Hetty, and the check was for $1 million. And now he's, you know, he wants kisses. He wants to be back in her good graces. But she's too stunned.
She's stunned. Can't speak, just stare.
$1 million. And at the same time, Max is watching. Did you notice Max was in the house?
The phone starts
ringing.
So where'd he go?
Right. Because the phone is ringing. He's not in the house when she comes back in.
But he was watching that.
Right.
I would have been standing there like Madeline, though. $1 million. Stop kissing me. $1 million.
So Max, Grover is calling. He's calling for her mother. But when Madeline answers, she tells him, I know about the check. And he says, well, if you want to come to the house alone... for an explanation. And
what a dumb move, right?
Right. They always do that.
They always make that dumb move. I would have been like, meet me at my lawyer's.
Right.
You know, and Perry, hell, he'll get up in the middle of the night to go meet a client.
Right.
He doesn't care. I'll be there in 20 minutes. I think he lives next door to his office.
He's fondling the briefcase. So, Justin, you know. So, then there's a next scene, which I thought was so horrible. She comes running out of what we find out is Justin's house, and she's carrying a briefcase. And she runs into a cop, and she goes, there's a man in there, Justin Grover. He's in there, and he goes,
please. The house is all up in flames, too.
There must have been some accelerant. It just went.
Yeah, I mean, totally burnt up. But yeah. She said, there's a man in there. And the cop says, what, April?
There was a man in there.
There was a man. Ain't a man no more.
You could still
crispy,
try.
Burnt up man.
Yeah, you could still try. So the next scene, they're at the jail. And they're grilling Madeline. They're all there, Paul, Perry, and Berger. Berger is just letting her have it, saying, you know, she's so dramatic. I ran into the kitchen. I tripped. I didn't realize I saw a man in the kitchen. I thought it was Justin. And I fell over and I hit my head. And I'm sorry. I know I should. I don't want to criticize Perry Mason, but these people are always falling and hitting their head.
Unconscious.
Yes. And
they just don't fall. They fall and knock themselves out.
Right. And which one was that? The Ominous Outcast? He fell and hit his head, you know. And every time that happens while they're unconscious, somebody else comes in and kills.
Somebody gets killed.
Right. Yes. And she goes, you got the briefcase. He goes, I had to get the briefcase. My mother's check was in there. Well, honey.
I'm telling you, went in there. But Justin was in there. Maybe she didn't see
Justin.
But Justin, she knew Justin was somewhere because she was supposed to meet him.
Well, no, she saw somebody in the kitchen and she thought that was him.
Maybe she thought that was Justin and he had run out.
Run out, and yeah.
But she got that check. She had enough sense to do that.
Well, you know, honestly, between you and me, if a check burns up and it's certified, they can replace it.
But
she got the check and she ran out.
Miss Randall, Justin Grover died in that fire. A fire for which you are responsible.
But I told you what happened, Mr. Berger. I ran into the kitchen, tripped, and fell against the table.
Which struck the defective heater and started the fire.
Yes, but I didn't know it at the time. When I fell, I must have struck my head. When I came to, the place was filled with fire and smoke. I know I started the fire, Mr. Berger, but it was an accident, an unintentional accident.
Of course, you tried to reach Justin Grover to make sure he wasn't trapped in that unintentional fire.
The flames were everywhere. I couldn't get to him, to anything.
Except the briefcase. You got to that, didn't you?
My mother's check.
That's all, Miss Randall. You've been more than cooperative with the district attorney. Hamilton, if you don't mind, I'd like to speak with my client.
Now it's her and Paul. And she's
and Perry.
Going,
yeah. And Perry's giving her the blue. I told you not to go to Justin Grover.
You should have called me. That's what they all were telling. She goes, she says the front door was open. And Paul says, no, the front door was locked. The back door was jimmied.
Mm-hmm.
That's when she realizes that they're going to think that she broke in. And she goes,
to get the suitcase, to get the briefcase.
Right. And she said,
Liar, pants on fire.
She said,
but her pants were almost on fire.
Right. she was very emotional. And Perry says, well, there's the felony. Paul says there was a felony murder rule. Taking the briefcase was a felony that resulted in murder.
Uh-huh.
And, she says, well, are they going to charge me with stealing the briefcase? No, they're going to charge you with murder.
Mm-hmm.
First degree, you know, which is punishable by death. So they're back in Hetty's kitchen. I loved Della's dress. She's got this nice little two-button one. I'll put a picture in the show notes. Hetty is signing the papers for the money. Perry wants to know, why would she leave a nurse all this money? She goes, why not? You know, we were good friends. We worked together I worked for her for years. And Perry's suspicious. You know, what's the truth? I feel like you're not telling me something. You know, this could mean life or death for your daughter. Hetty looks up and Max is shaking his head. No.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you know, I think you better leave. Hetty says, you think you better leave. You know, you're a good lawyer. You're the best there is. You're going to get her off.
Mm-hmm. So, me having to tell what I don't want to tell.
Whatever secret is so horrible. So the next scene is Paula's talking to Carla, and she's not giving up any information. And she uses the word, she calls him Seamus. Now, that's interesting because that was a word that was used back in the day for detective. A Seamus. S-E-A-M. And, you know, it's also a name in, like, a Irish name.
Mm-hmm. She called him a gumshoe, too.
Right. But it was Seamus is known.
I didn't know that about Seamus, though.
S-H-A-M-U-S. Said to be from the Irish. Oh, wait, no. Yes, it means Seamus, believed to have originated in the late 1920s, early 1930s, and of obscure origin. And it was meant as a private detective. Maybe there was a private detective named Seamus, and they just went from there. So she's like, you know, I'm not going to let you get away with me. I'm not giving up any information. I'm a private secretary for Justin Grover, and private means private. And so he offers her a cigarette, and she goes, no, thank you, I don't smoke. And he plays that up. Say that again. And, you know, you must be one of the talented women that Abe Schooner is looking for. And, no, you're not the right one. And then she's all eager. Abe Schooner, the talent agent? Is he a talent agent? And so the next thing, we're back in Perry's office. And Perry is there with all of BB's people. Chester, Lawton, Reed, and Chester is so mad. They're like, "Well, who are you representing? The nurse or Madeline?" And Perry says both, and Eloise says, "Of course, murder defense is so expensive. She is such a hoity-toity. I just want to slap her." And she says, "Well, you can't prove anything. You know, you weren't there. That we know that was here." And Lawton says, "Well, not necessary. Me and Reed are going to testify that we saw the check." And Eloise calls him a saint with his noblesse oblige, his pinky in the air. Uh-huh. And then,
did you know what noblesse? Noblesse oblige meant.
No,
I did not.
Okay,
that nobility extends beyond mere entitlement, requiring people who hold such status to fulfill social responsibilities. So since Lawton was so noble, upper class, right, I guess, yeah, he was required to be, you know, socially moral.
Right.
But I still don't know why he was going to let his son married the nurse's daughter. That, I mean, they usually try to match their people up with, you know,
well, she's
somebody with a whole bunch of money.
She's calling him that. He's not saying that. So she's calling him that. He's not saying he's no.
Right. That's exactly right. But what I'm saying is,
and all throughout the whole thing, he always looked more guilty than
his and he did love Madeline. He was not snooty at all.
Oh, no,
which is why I'm surprised, because Chester and his wife were kind of snooty.
Right. And they're arguing about the whole thing, and they're saying Chester and Eloise say no against Lawton and Reed, and it's 2-2, and they say no. Perry says no, it's 3-2, and he goes, "Oh, what is Justin gonna be gonna have a, what did she call it, tabletop rapting? Are you gonna have
a seance,
right?" And she says no, because Justin wrote in his office diary that he accepted the check from BB. So apparently Paul's scheme worked, and Carla once again spilled the tea. And then Chester says, "Well, it doesn't make sense to give a nurse $1 million. And that's when Lieutenant Andrews walks in. I mean, they're having a private discussion, and he walks in. We talked about him a couple episodes ago. He is Lieutenant Tregg's replacement. Lieutenant Tregg still gets credit in this episode, but he had not been in since this was 1963, and he hadn't been in for a few episodes. This is when he started getting, he was getting credit. He passed away in 65, but he had stopped being in Perry Mason a few episodes before this one. And so he walks in and he says, the check was not for, it wasn't for Hetty. Hetty was just a go-between between BB and someone else. And that's when Perry says, Madeline. And then Lieutenant Andrew says, yes, Madeline was BB Brent's daughter. And everybody.
But I knew it. I knew it.
Eloise is back to clutching her pearls again.
I know. Back to clutching her pearls.
So now we can say, so that was the that was a big secret. That was why Hetty was getting the check. And, you know, so now we're in court. And Chester is testifying that BB's husband went on a trip and was caught in an avalanche. And for 14 months, they thought he was dead. And so that was a long time for, you know.
And of course, BB's husband was Chester and Lawton's brother.
Brother, right. And BB's husband started the business. The whole business, whatever the business was his. But then
Chester and Lawton worked for him.
For him. And, and so then 14 months later, Chester got a call that they found Philip in a hospital, a small hospital in the Alps. And they brought him home, and he lived there, and they took care of him. And for many years, I mean, it had to be...
I didn't get the idea of how many years it was.
Well, we can do the math. So how old do you think Madeline was?
Right, but Madeline wasn't his child.
No, but Madeline was born the day that... was born during the time when BB had been notified. They had notified BB that Philip was alive, and they brought him home.
And she was trying to get home, and she had some kind of
So he had been sick for. Let's say Madeline's 20 years old.
Right.
So he had been sick for 20 years.
And BB took care of him, too, they said later.
He take care of him, and that was a reason for Hetty. Well, we're going to get to that. So so then Eloise, with her flowered hat and her said that after they had word of Philip's death, that BB had gone to pieces. That she was just trying to make BB look unstable.
She was trying to make BB look crazy. And she tried to interject, and Berger wasn't having it.
Right. That she was, she went out with some cowboy in Nevada. And Chester went to find, and she couldn't find him. So they're making her look like she was just like a floozy traveling around and stuff. But when she called her about her husband, BB said, okay, well, I'm going to drive home. And on the way home, there was an accident, and she was in the hospital. She was banged up. And then she goes, or so we thought. She makes a little.
Aha!
So then Hetty gets on the stand and says that when BB was in the accident, she was all broken up. She was coming home to Philip, a man that you couldn't talk to. He wasn't the only person he recognized was Hetty, supposedly. But she said that BB didn't know what to do. So Hetty lied and said that the baby was hers and that she was married. And that's when Hetty took off that ring. She was like, damn, I've been wearing this stupid ring for 20 years. Taking it off.
No, when BB was on the run and messing around, that's when she...
Hetty was Max's sister. And so we're going to find out later that they got married.
Right.
And so she found out
that somewhere along the line, Maxon
Mm-hmm. So Hattie's hung out with Bibi because it was, you know, her sister-in-law. So we're gonna find out that she was a sister. So he lied. So she stayed and helped Bibi with Mr. Brent Phillip.
Poor girl, hurt in that auto smash up. Her baby coming sooner than she expected. Her own true legal husband, whom she thought was dead, was on his way home to her. He was sick. A man you couldn't talk to, explain things to. She didn't know what to do. I lied on the records. Said I was married. Listed the child as my own. Bibi needed help with Mr. Brent. And it gave her a chance to see her own child whenever she wanted to. Bibi loved her. Truly loved her. We both did. She had two mothers, my little Madeline.
And that gave a chance, Bibi, to spend time.
Be around Madeline.
Our little Madeline had two mothers.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting about the other comment that Hattie was more than just a nurse, but we won't go there.
Could have been. You never know.
Yes. And so...
And Perry Mason wouldn't have disclosed it back then.
No.
For sure.
Right, right. So he gets on the stand and he's Berger grills him. Did Madeline know the money was hers? And he said, no, she didn't. So then Lawton's on the stand and he says that when Phil came back to the company, he wanted us to have the company. He wanted the brothers to be in charge. And they ran the company through the three of them through Justin Grover with Bibi. Bibi and Justin ran the company and Lawton and Chester were worked for them. And so he asked, well, why didn't they give him the check? He said the company need money. Lawton wanted to strengthen the company and then turn the gift over to Madeline. And he says, we all owe Madeline an apology. And we beg her forgiveness. And that's when Lawton says Madeline told him that she knew Bibi was her mother. And he says, forgive me, Madeline. She would get the check from Justin Grover, even if she had to light a fire under him to get it.
And that's what she did.
Well, yeah. Now they're back in the office. Perry's pacing. There's a nice scene, and I'm going to put that in the show notes, of the skyline behind him and Della's cute little black dress. And... Paul comes in and says Perry must have a crystal ball. There was a shortage of $150,000 on a preliminary examination of the company books, and that he had to promise Carla a screen test with Abe Schooner. And
was Perry's friend. You know, he knew everybody.
He knows everybody, and. I'm looking up one.
And everybody knew him.
150,000.
You're Perry Mason, yes. The famous lawyer.
I know you from. I've seen your paper, your face in the papers. So 150,000 would have been 1,474,000 now. So 1,500,000. So
right, but out 50, of okay, we're talking out of a million,
a
which
million.
Was which is what like right. 100 million.
100 million, right?
So it still was a drop in the bucket, and they could have turned over the rest. Well, we had that discussion about the cashier's check,
right?
There's something fishy there, anyway.
So, and Carla also confirmed that Justin Grover had been running around with a woman on the QT. So, Paul says, oh, well, we know who the murderer is. You've told me. He does that a lot. I did.
I know.
I'm like, what?
You told me who the murderer was, and you told me who Justin Grover was running around with.
Right, but... then Della says, but Madeline is still responsible for Justin's Grover's
death, right.
Since she did start the fire. And Perry said, did she?
Did she?
And now we're back in the courthouse, and Carla is being Carla on the stand. She's over talking Burger. She's going, you know, I have to answer that button when Justin presses it. One day I didn't answer it, and boy, did he give me a. And Burger's going, please. She goes, did Madeline know? Burger asked, did Madeline know that Justin signaled to interrupt your conversation? And she says, yep. And she was mad too. So, and here's the key argument, the key testimony is the neighbor. The neighbor says, if Madeline said that she just ran in and tripped and started the fire, that she must have been, she wasn't telling the truth. And there's always a nosy neighbor. There is always a nosy neighbor. She goes, because I heard a woman arguing with her for 15 minutes.
15 minutes? Yes. Arguing with Justin.
Right. Right. And
so there was that disconnect right there.
Right. And then the policeman says, yes, she came running out. She had the briefcase. And then we have Michael Fox playing the coroner.
He's played it before.
He's played it hundreds of times. I mean, he has the best. Well, he has the second best job. The best job always to me, and I've talked about this, is the court reporter sitting there typing there. What is he doing? What is he really doing? Is he's just looking busy, typing his fingers. So he says that.
And anybody could sit there and do that.
Right.
I've seen one or two episodes where they ask the court reporter to go back and find something.
But normally they just sitting there typing. They said there were severe lacerations, but he died of smoke inhalation. Which is, you know, even if she did start the fire, where did the severe lacerations come from?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And Berger does his little speech that he doesn't have to prove premeditation, that in the felony rule, death in the commission.
Felony murder rule. That's what I was trying to think of before. Yeah. Death in the commission of a felony. That's Penal Code 185.
And under that, so then Perry says, but under the felony murder, the doing of the act does not prove intent. So then Max is on the stand, and he admitted that he told Madeline that she was BB's daughter, because he says, they say, you know, she didn't know she was BB's daughter after talking to Reed. She knew about the check, but she didn't know that she was BB's daughter. And then Max says that he went to Justin Grover's, and Jimmy'd open the back door because he wanted to get the check for the girl.
Right. He didn't want to check for himself.
Well, you know.
Wanted to check for his, maybe he did, you know, as it turns out, but.
Right. Well, you know.
At that point, I was like, yeah, right.
It's going to be all in the family.
Yeah, he could have sucked it from Madeline. He said she got it.
He never got beyond the kitchen, heard someone coming, knocked over a table. He didn't know it was Madeline. And then Perry says, all those years, why was Madeline's identity a secret? And he says, because Bebe had gotten married, that she thought that her husband was dead. One night she was sick inside, not drunk or anything, but they ended up getting married. She married this man, and she didn't know her first husband was still alive, and therefore, dun, dun, dun. Madeline was
such a dirty word.
Yes.
Illegitimate.
Just like in the Borrowed Baby, she was so worried that the baby was illegitimate. You know, that's such and in Nebulous Nephew, you know, they were saying that they were trying to say that, you know, the marriage was annulled, then the baby was illegitimate. Which you know, yes, there's a lot of, teenage pregnancies out there now and people having babies out of wedlock. I'm just glad that it's never, why blame the baby? Why label the baby? So,
it's interesting because the baby winds up, you know, bearing some of the shame.
Fine. The baby didn't do anything. The baby just existed. Harry says, Max, when you told Madeline Beebe was her mother, did you tell her you were her father? And he said no, and he hung his head. So that's how Hetty got into it. He Max was her brother. She was probably there for the wedding, probably got to know BB a lot. And then BB was pregnant, so she started traveling with her. And then, you know, then they're like trying to figure out are we going to do about this baby?
Right.
Everybody knows it's going to be, she's going to be illegitimate. How do we, you know, this is crazy. My first husband is still alive. And so.
And he was, might have been the cowboy that Eloise was talking about.
Right, right.
And
So, then Chester thought that Chester's on the stand, and Chester thought that Justin was.
Wait a minute, is Chester on the stand?
Yes. Oh.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay. Go ahead.
Chester's on the stand, and he thought that. No, I'm sorry. Lawton's on the stand. Lawton thought that Chester was the embezzler. And then he found out that Justin was the embezzler. So Chester.
Right.
Yeah. So Lawton was not greedy, but Chester was greedy.
But not that greedy.
Yeah. So Lawton was just trying to protect his brother. So Lawton went to Justin Grover's house and says that he was trying to get the money together. He was the one that he was involved with, that he was taking the money, but he was expecting the woman that he was involved with that so that he could put the money back together, get the money back, if I'm making sense. And that's when Perry says, did Justin tell you who the woman was he was seeing secretly, who was going to be bringing the money? And then Eloise jumped up and says, I may have been with Chester, but I may have been with Justin, but I didn't kill him. It wasn't me.
I swear I didn't. I always just busted.
And it's funny. It's what they usually do is that they admit something really bad to prove that they didn't kill him. I slept with him, but I didn't kill him.
I didn't kill him. I stole the money, but I didn't kill him.
Chester says, why don't you just shut up? So now Carl is on the stand, and Perry's saying Justin Grover and Eloise Brent together robbed the money of over $250,000. And Carla says, no, it was $150,000. And again,
she don't know what to say. She just blurts out stuff.
Yeah. So Perry's like, how was the screen test? It was great. And he points out that Carla had taken a screen test 3 years earlier with Abe Schooner and that she was offered a contract of $500 a week. Why did you go to work for Grover for $100 a week? And Paul had done some checking, found out you have a safety deposit box. If we look in that safety deposit box, what will we find? And then Carla just lets
that
it all
fool,
out.
That stupid fool, his conscience was bothering him. I had over $100,000 in that box, and he was going to tell police and turn us both in. I hid him and hid in the house.
Justin and the girl were unconscious. She saw that the heater was malfunctioning, so she pulled it to the curtain and let it catch on fire, and then she left him there and got in his car and drove away. So
she left Justin there and Madeline there, right?
Right, yes.
I mean, she was cold-blooded for that $150,000.
Right. She goes, that
money was mine.
I had to have it.
And Perry says,
what are you going to do with it now, Carla? Dun, dun, dun. Courtroom confession. Carla was the one that she was the one that was arguing with. She was the one that caused the last arrest. They wrap it up, and they're back in Perry's office. There's Madeline, Hetty, and Max. And Perry has a book from Max, and I guess Della has marked it. She goes,
Hey, Max, this is for you. California codes.
It's marked. Read section 85.
You said something on the stand about Madeline. A misconception a lot of people have. The issue of a marriage which is void or annulled or dissolved by divorce
is legitimate.
There you are. Madeline Randall has always been legitimate.
Madeline Brent, if you please.
And don't tell me there's anything wrong with that.
Hey, how about that?
That's right, Dad. How about that?
Madeline has always been legitimate.
Yes.
And then Max says, how about that?
And Madeline.
And Madeline says, yes, Dad. How about that?
And they're all happy. Her real mom's dead. She never knew it was her mom, but
She had Hetty and Max now, and they got lots of money. Wonder what happened to the other people.
And they're married.
What you were telling me about.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to Chester and Lawton and the company?
I think Lawton's okay.
Chester. Did Chester and Eloise stay together?
Stay together after she finds out that he fooled around. But
Chester fooled around too?
No, that Chester found out that Eloise fooled around.
Oh, yeah. That's why I was wondering if they stayed together.
And now that we know that Madeline is Bebe's daughter, does she get the company?
Right. Yeah. What happened?
Right.
And do Lawton and Chester start working for her?
Right.
Her and Reed.
Because they got married. So, this was a good episode. It was another thing about the illegitimate child. It reminds me of the one, the unshaved witness.
Uh-huh.
The one where Paul has to go out and help the woman off, and they take the train to the town. And they, do you remember that one? Anyway, there was a character in there.
This was a new one for me.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll do.
A lot of them. I'm looking at fresh eyes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, but did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I liked it.
This is one of my favorites.
I went looking for some behind the scenes tea.
Okay.
And I came up with some stuff on our favorite secretary, Miss Della Street.
Okie dokie.
So three facts about Della. How about that?
Okay.
So the first fact, and we've talked about this a couple of times, that Della was played by Barbara Hale. And Barbara Hale's son, his name was William Catt, he played Paul Drake's son in the Perry Mason movies.
Right.
So he played alongside Hale in 9 Perry Mason movies from 1985 to 1988. Those movies blew up. I mean, it was so popular.
Right.
Then Hale guest starred on her son's series. So her son, that's William Catt, played the greatest American hero.
Believe it or not.
Played his mother.
Oh, wow.
Of course, in an episode in 1982. She also played his mother in a movie, in a feature movie that they were in.
Oh.
That movie was called Big Wednesday, 1978. So, little mother and son coincidences back and forth.
Right.
The second fact about Della is that she won an Emmy. She won an Emmy for playing Della Street.
Oh.
Best Supporting Actress in a Dramatic Series in 1959.
Oh, cool.
And then the third fact about Barbara Hale was that she guest starred in an episode of Ironside. So it just went round and round and round. In addition to the movies, she guest starred in a 1971 episode of Ironside. But the interesting thing was she didn't play Della Street. She played a character named Marcia Connell.
Oh, okay. Because,
so that was kind of interesting,
it wasn't
too.
Perry Mason anymore. It was Ironside.
But he wasn't Perry Mason anymore,
right.
So
right.
She really couldn't have played Della
Street. In a wheelchair.
Huh?
Ironside in a wheelchair.
Yeah, exactly. It would have been like, where'd you come from? 1965?
don't I know you from somewhere?
Don't I know you from somewhere? Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that's funny.
So, Denise, you are leaving on a trip. Where are you going?
Yep.
Going on a...
I am going on a 12-day cruise out of Baltimore.
How wonderful.
I can't wait. I'm going to hit about 5 islands. trying to decide how many bathing suits do you need for five islands? I can't decide, but I'm working on that. That's the big question for today.
So yeah,
I've got a 7, I've gotten an 8. I don't know. So I'll be gone from April 8th to April 12th.
And you're not going to be podcasting?
Back that up. April 8th to April 20th.
Right. I was going to say that's 4 days. But you're not going to be podcasting while you're on your cruise, are you?
No, I'm sorry. I probably won't even, you know what? I'm going to have to download some Perry Masons.
So you can take it with you. So
yeah, because you know I can't even hardly go to sleep without one.
Right. So I I did a call out to the community. I checked some, I ran into someone in the community on Facebook who is in my Facebook Perry Mason group, or the Facebook Perry Mason group. And I would like to introduce you all to Tamara. Hello, Tamara.
Hello, how are you, lady?
We are great. And we just want to say thank you so much for stepping up and helping out while Denise is off gallivanting and enjoying herself. So you'll be joining me for next week, where we will be doing 9 dolls. And can you want to say a little few words, introduce yourself as far as your Perry Mason fandom?
My Perry Mason fandom has been since I've been a small child. I used to watch it with my grandparents. Hmm. And then when the movie started, I actually was in 5th grade when they started the movies, and I was a freshman in college when they ended the movie with Raymond Burr. And I'm in multiple Perry Mason groups, and I also am a fan fiction writer of Perry Mason.
That's very interesting. Story. So yeah, you'll have to put a link in the show notes so people can check out your. So are you published? I mean, have you put out fan fiction somewhere, or you just write it for your own enjoyment?
I have published on the fan fiction site and also on archive. Okay. I have stories on both.
Oh, how great. We'll have to check those.
I'd love to read something. Yeah, yeah, put a link out.
Yes.
I will.
So good. And nice to meet you. It's a pleasure.
Nice meeting you. And enjoy your cruise.
Yeah, thank you. And have fun with April while I'm gone.
Denise, I will try.
Denise will be back on the 24th. First, I think the next one after this. So Tamara's going to be with us for the next 3 episodes. So next week we're going to be doing Tamara and I will be doing the 9 doll episode, which is one of my favorites. And
mine too.
Yeah, we look forward to that, and we will have Denise back after that, after the 3 episodes. And we're going to miss you, but enjoy yourself.
Thanks. I'll be nice and tanned, but you won't be able to see that, will you?
No. Maybe one day we'll do a video. We'll stream. And that way we could have interaction and people could ask questions and stuff. It'd be kind of interesting. Or contribute. All right. So thank you, Tamara. We'll see you next week.
Bye. And have fun.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
I'm April.
Thank you.
And I'm Dee.
And we'll see you next week.